Everybody ready? Come on, let's go. 3-4 show. Let's go. 3-4 show. Let's go.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to the Rick Thorne Show. This episode is going to go off because I have BMX legend RL Osborne in the house. We're going to talk about the early days of BMX racing, BMX freestyle, his trick team, the companies he started, all the things that he's done for the sport. He's done so much for BMX. I'm so honored to do this interview. I hope you enjoy it. Let's do this. What up? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
What's happening?
I'm good, dude. What are you up to?
Just checking out your wall.
I know, it's all of me. I'm so arrogant. No, it's not. I'm kidding. I got, okay, check it out. I got Dennis. I got Rooftop. I got Dave Mara. I got Colin Morrison, Tony Hawk.
Nice.
McGrath, Hoffman, Evil Knievel. I got to get RL up there, dude. I need something signed, bruh.
I know it's hard to get pictures from other people, you know, because you got to call them up and we don't have any more of those. Well, can you, you know. So I just Dylan pulled a bunch of stuff out, and
I'm pretty stoked right now to be sitting here talking to you because, you know, I was a Midwest kid looking up to you. You know what I mean? Back in
well,
the day.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. And I've been watching you too, man. You've kind of broken out and gone all these different ways, and that's just amazing to me, you know?
Just trying to stay busy, man. I mean, hey, look, everything that I approach, I don't know if you do this, but I approach like riding, like what it takes to be a bike rider.
Yeah.
And then I apply all that and I was like, oh, same kind of attitude, you know?
Yeah. So, over and over and over until you're ready to kill yourself, right?
Slam, get up, pull this.
I was riding this morning. I'm like, why am I doing this? Because I go out some days and it's like, who's riding my bike? It's going so good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then other days it's like nothing will work and it's over the bars, over the bars, over the bars, over the bars, you know? And I'm like, man. And then I think of Rodney Mullen and I think, man, Rodney didn't buy that whole thing about good and bad days. He was like, I'm going to be good every day. And
yeah.
So I'm trying to adapt that. It's not helping yet, but we'll see.
I mean, I think anybody out there that rides bikes or skates is listening. We all go through that. Like some days you think like, oh man, I don't have the energy. The example yesterday, I wanted to ride, but I wasn't really trying to push myself, but everything felt really easy.
Yeah.
Even though it's tricks that I've been doing for a long time, it still was cool. I was like, wow, that's weird. And then other days when you're really hyped, put in the effort, it's not working. This doesn't make sense. You know?
So, yeah. Right. And then you're like, on the good days, you're like, okay, what did I eat yesterday? Who did I talk to? What did I do to make this happen? You know? And
I eat In-N-Out double. I eat In-N-Out patties every day, bro.
Do you?
I didn't grow up with In-N-Out. You were lucky. You lived in California. It's you. It's like whatever is probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm down, man. I do the. I mean, I try to eat healthy because my family eats really healthy. You know.
Yeah.
But I get so much energy from sugar, caffeine, and hamburgers, man. I die. I just go to sleep if I'm not eating that stuff. So.
I'm telling you, dude. I've been getting the patties, bro, with no meat, just the patties and onions. I lost
So you're not eating carbs?
No, I lost 36 pounds, bro.
I know, right?
Yeah, so slicing that stuff out. So anyways.
That's how you did it? No carbs?
I mean, I'll still eat carbs, but through vegetables and stuff. And then maybe on a day, like a cheat day, you have like a granola bar or something. But like, I try to stay away from like chips and sugar and rice and bread. I don't eat any bread. And then it just starts to fall off, you know, it's crazy. I think it's more the sugar. I love it. I love sugar. Man, everyone loves sugar, right? But
yeah,
that's what it was for me if I wanted to keep riding. And what I noticed about you, bro, is like you're coming back into it after, you know, taking a big break. You probably always rode. I don't know, but like you.
No, I was gone. I was not riding.
Okay. So what was it when you quit riding up until now? How many years was that? Well, not quit riding, but you know what I mean? Like you said, all right.
Yeah, quit. No, when I was done, I was done. I wasn't like messing around, you know. I got into business and it's just too hard to, I quit for a lot of reasons, but I don't know. Let's see. 30 something years I was off.
Wow.
So I'm 59. I don't know. I'm not good at that. Probably 35 years. I don't know. 30, 35 years.
And that's amazing, though, because a lot of dudes that take that big of a break can't come back and do anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, whether it's their body or their bike or their mentality or just the fear factor or all these other things. And I just see, I've been watching you on Instagram and it's like, you're getting better and better and better. And I think it's pretty rad because not a lot of people can do that, dude. You know?
Yeah. It's hard with all the injuries and migraines and everything I got to deal with. You know, it's recovery time is really important, and I get hurt a lot, man. I ride way over my head, like, especially if I'm on dirt jumps, man. You know, your brain's going, oh, you got this, man. It's, you know, 10-foot vertical takeoff and a 20-foot gap with a freaking cliff in the middle, you know? And I'll try it, but yeah, I just end up crashing and crashing and crashing and crashing.
You said you get migraines bad?
Well, here's the story. I've had migraines. I got ran over when I used to race motorcycles. I got ran over on a motorcycle on a track. I was on the wrong track. Started then. And then 20, 25 years ago, they were severe, 24/7, in and out, throwing up, crawling on the floor.
Wow.
And I had surgery for it. It got so bad. I found the guy. Everybody's like, there's no such thing as migraine surgery. And I found a guy in Houston, Texas. He goes, yeah, I'll do it. They cut up the back of my neck like 6 inches. They cut under my eyes and they cut the side of my head 5 hours. And they do something with the nerves. I don't know what, but I'll tell you what, that decreased it 70% ish, maybe a little
That's
more.
Good.
I couldn't, I'd leave in the morning with a pile of drugs in my pocket in case I migraine, you know, migraine on tour buses in the Alps and in customs, you know, 500 people waiting to get through customs. I'm on the floor crawling around, throwing up, you know,
wow.
Everywhere. It's pretty, you don't even care anymore after a while. It's like, you know, but yeah, I don't do that anymore, but I still gotta, when I start to get one, I still gotta relax, you know, chill out.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Just helping, does riding help with that? I mean, I don't know. I think riding helps with everything, but I guess if you have a migraine, it sucks to ride to do anything. But I just know that with riding, it always just seems to make my life so much better. You know,
I know. Don't, you know, it seems like if I don't ride, things get worse.
Right.
So if I do ride, you know, as long as if I get concussions really easy now, I don't know why, but whenever I get a concussion, there's always a host of things that come along with that, you know? So, but yeah, I'd say, it keeps you going, keeps your brain going, causes me to focus, you know? And then you get that thrill of getting closer to a move, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Or, you know, so yeah.
Well, you know, dude, you like, I don't know where to start, man, because you've done, well, we've already started, but where to go from here, because you've done so much stuff, right? Like in your life. And I guess what I wanted to ask you, what got you into riding? Because you got into it, the listeners out there, RL got into it when it wasn't on TV, when it wasn't like a thing, when it wasn't in anything. It was just like kids on bikes, right? And so what got you into just riding?
You know, I was always into motorcycles and mini bikes. And at four, I had a Sears. I think I got my first Sears bike. And I was trying to do wheelies and jumps on it instantly, you know, but there was nobody. I didn't have friends to ride with. There's friends that I hung out with. My half brother would do wheelies with me, you know. This guy used to ride a Honda Elsinore with a gray tank, and he used to do wheelies all the way down the street. And I used to go, man, if I could do that on my bike, I'd be happy, you know. So I wanted to get to that point, you know. But yeah, that's, I just been into bikes and motorcycles forever. I don't understand baseball, to be honest with you. I don't get, there's a kid out there that's less coordinated or as uncoordinated as me throwing a hard rock at me. How does that work? And I don't have any control over it, you know? Soccer didn't do much for me. I like supercross, BMX, ramp, street, the freestyle motorcycle stuff, you know?
So it was just riding on the street with the kids or by yourself. And was it the feeling that it gave you that made you want to keep writing? It seems like that would have been the main focus, right?
Yeah, we started doing jumps. And then, you know, we had, after a while, you know, when I got in, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, we had 4 or 5 guys that would ride. We'd ride together, go build, you know, digging and building jumps was, that was like going to church, man. It was just great to dig and build a jump and look forward to hitting it. And then, you know, by the time I was 8 or 9, 10, then I had 18-year-old friends that were, right, it was a pack of us, man. It was just, and we just go to the park and ride and screw around and do stupid stuff, you know. And then this other guy, we would build jumps on these 50-gallon containers, put a tire on it, piece of wood, and we'd fly over the jump to the landing, and we just kept moving it back. And we would do that every day, every day. So it was just it was something I did with my friends. It was great, you know.
Where was it when you guys, I mean, I think that's how like a lot of us old school started, but I also kind of started because I saw the magazines. Well, I rode bikes, but then it wasn't until I started doing tricks where I was like, whoa, what is this? You know, even though I had a bike and we rode around the neighborhood and stuff. Do you remember that point where it was like, okay, we're like riding, we're having fun. And now it's like, now it's this thing called freestyle. Like there had to be a point. Was there a point where like, you were like, oh, let's do tricks. You started to develop that. Cause it all, did you start, you raced for a long time too, right? Didn't you?
Yeah. So funny. Put it this way. When I was riding BMX, there was no BMX, you know, I'd go in a Schwinn shop and I had these big ape hangers on my bike and they kept snapping. And the lady got pissed at me for like 3 years. She was just, you can't do that stuff. And eventually the third year she sponsored me.
Shut up, lady. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
No, she was cool. She was, her name is Paulina Redondo Beach Cyclery. And she awesome. Sponsored me and started giving me handlebars.
Oh, sick.
So when I was started riding BMX, there was no BMX. There was just me, a couple of my friends, basically guys that did wheelies. Then my dad and I went to city council meetings and got permission to put a track together. And then from there, we heard that there was stuff in Soledad that was going on. And that's where like Bob Hanna was racing bikes, David Clinton, Bobby Encinas, Stu Thompson, you know. And so we had kind of started probably about the same time as them, Scott Breithop. And then we got caught up in their thing, you know. So, yeah, when I was racing mini bikes, Ernie Alexander and his wife, Suzanne, were the ones handling the mini bike races at Indian Dunes, right? And then when we went to Soledad, he was the guy that started the NBA, National Bicycle League. So he was putting on bicycle races, which was kind of a trip. They moved over too, you know?
Awesome. But
yeah. So, yeah, I've been there. I was there to watch go from racing on a grass track with chalk lines to Soledad, which was when Scott Breithop came into it. And there's doubles, downhill, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. And yeah, then On Any Sunday came out. That was a big thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But there was no BMX. When I was I had jumps and stuff like that. And there was just me and a couple of my friends. That's all I knew. I didn't know anybody or hear of anybody doing anything.
Crazy. And the bikes obviously weren't set up for 20-inch like race style bikes, right? They were like the old school.
They were old school.
Yeah.
And then people started making their own frames. Like Marvin Church and his dad built the first, well, not the first, but I don't know. Then the triangle frame started kind of, you know, you'd use a Schwinn rear end and then you put a triangle front end on it, you know, and your dad would weld it for you. That started coming out. And then there was Webco and all these companies that started to come in. But it was fascinating to watch that come together. It's more fascinating now. Back then, it was just like I was either racing motorcycles or BMX, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah, and then you asked me how freestyle came out of that.
Yeah, or just kind of like where I love the history, and I think it, you have so much of it, and you're such a legend in this sport. Yeah, just like, you know, I remember just real quick when we used to race, because we started out racing, but we were riding quarter pipes and stuff and doing flatland stuff in the parking lot. And there was a point where I was like, all right, I'm done with racing. Like, I'm going to be a freestyler. But for me, it was like there was already like you guys were the generation before us. So there was already in my mind like, oh, I could be a freestyler because there was an option for you. like, well, you always have an option, but you know what I mean? Like for you, it wasn't like, oh, I could either race or freestyle. It was like, right. Where was that point where you're like, you're racing a lot and you're just like, dude, I want to be a freestyler. But freestyle was new,
yeah.
Right? So was it that being part of that movement? What was that feeling like? Like, what do you remember that moment is what I'm asking? Like where you were like,
yeah,
yo, I'm done with this. I'm going to do this. And it was new and no one even knew what it was. Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was racing BMX and when the NBA was running stuff and it was Soledad and Somar, the jumps were big, doubles, downhill. It was like motocross. And right. Then the jumps got smaller and people started wheeling over the jumps and it was just different. It wasn't as fun for me. And I was racing 7 different races per week, you know, different places per week.
Wow.
And I burned out. And by the time I was 13 or 14, my dad was getting ready to go to the races. All my friends are in the car and I rode away and he goes, where are you going? I said, I'm going to go ride my bike. I'm not racing anymore. And I quit. Wow. I went back at 16 and raced local pro with some of my friends, but I was done, man. It wasn't like what me and my friends were doing jumping, you know, mm-hmm. It was speed jumping and staying low to the ground and stuff like that, which I get, you know, I mean, those guys are amazing now, but just the old style was huge jumps, man. Huge jumps. All ages rode the same track too. Downhill, sliding through berms, you know, you had time to pass. It was
all ages rode against each other.
No, all ages. It would be like 10 to 13.
Oh, okay.
You know, yeah. And yeah. 14 to 17. And then eventually got individual. But I mean, I was 10 riding huge jumps, same jumps that the pros were. Well, they weren't pros yet, but that the experts, 18-year-old experts were riding, you know, which was great. I mean, it was just a whole different sport, you know.
Yeah,
you like watching supercross if they never left the ground, you know. It's a different type of racing, you know.
Absolutely.
So
you just quit. You're like over it.
Well, I just told my dad, which is hard to do. I go, I'm not doing this anymore, you know. And I didn't go back for like 3 years. But my friends and I went back to jumping, and we're starting to do like take our hands off and trying to do 360s over jumps and stuff. And Bob Harrow was an artist for the magazine. He came to live with us in our house. And he wasn't really into the whole BMX thing, but he could do a rock walk.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And we were just like, whoa, that's heavy, man. And he was starting to roll backwards a little bit, you know? And then Bob and I started to ride together at Larry's Donuts. And that kind of from there, the competition between us was heavy, you know?
Yeah.
It built and built. And it was way more fun, you know? It was just way more fun. And from there, I just was on the road, you know, from 16 with Mike Buff, man. We were never home. We didn't even know what, if we were in Switzerland or Tennessee or Saudi Arabia. It was like, you know, you have no idea where you are. And that got pretty monotonous, but interesting though, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's a great experience. I want to ask you before I get into the touring and the Bob Harrow and all these, you know, when you were a freestyler and doing the BMX Action Trick Team and stuff, I wanted to ask you, when you were racing, did your dad start BMX Action Magazine at that time?
Yeah, we were racing in Soledad, which is one of the first tracks, which, by the way, the beginning of BMX has a huge amount to do with Scott Breithaupt.
Yeah.
Huge, man. He was like, I don't even think he had his driver's license, and he was holding big races, you know? Wow. Yeah. And then, you know, he got us into the Coliseum. We raced at the Coliseum in the Yamaha Gold Cup, which he put on. I think he was like 18, you know?
Yeah.
And we're in the Coliseum, man. It was crazy.
Wow.
And I forgot the question you asked me.
Oh, no, no worries. I was saying like when you were like, okay, I guess I'll ask it. What year did your dad start BMX Action Magazine?
All right. I don't know.
Okay. So were you racing though, before the magazine? Cause the rumor I always heard is that your dad started the magazine because you liked riding. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah, we were, way before there was even races, me and my friends were hitting jumps, and we'd come down this hill and hit a wood jump, you know, where the plywood's like halfway snap, yep. and just fly through the air. And if we didn't crash, we were stoked. And he goes, man, I don't, I'm not too sure about that, you know, because I know he's thinking hospital and everything like that. And
yeah,
I think he told me at one time, you know, you're having a good time, but it's not going to do anything. You're not going to go anywhere with this. Right. It's not, nothing's going to happen. Right. And, you know, at what, 9 years old or something, I'm like, I don't care. I'm not looking for a job right now. I'm having fun with my friends, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, he started the magazine because he got into what I was doing. Then he set up the city council meeting and got a track going. I just sat there next to him, like, you know, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And then he started driving us to the races, and a lady had Bicycle Motocross News. It was a newspaper, and she wanted to sell it to him. And he thought, for that, I could start a magazine. And there's the plant, you know.
Wow. So, wow. So you you get all the credit for all this stuff, bro.
No,
I'm joking. I'm joking. If you would have never been in BMX, like, you know what I mean? Like, should have, would have been crazy. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that's pretty cool.
I couldn't see what people were doing in the valley, what kids were doing.
Yeah.
You know? So I just knew in my neighborhood, nobody was riding, you know, until I got older. But man, he's a fireman, and he's a fireman putting a magazine together. You know, that's expensive. That's a lot of money into a sport that doesn't really exist yet, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's big balls right there, you know, mm-hmm. big balls. And then he started posting the wins, and people started getting sponsorships and stuff like that. So the magazine, maybe it wasn't first, but the impact was massive. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember being in, I don't know, like, I'm from Missouri, so they had Quick Trips. They're like 7-Elevens. And I remember looking down and seeing a magazine, and I was like, I had never seen BMX published in a, you know what I mean? Like, what the? And so I had already been riding, but that's what got me into it. And it was BMX Action was the first magazine I ever picked up. Yeah. I just think that's an amazing story. So you started the magazine, and that, your dad's awesome. So you started the magazine, you're racing, you decided you want to freestyle, and then you guys formed the BMX Action Trick Team, right?
Right.
Or was that Trick Team already there before you and Buff before? Did you guys race together as that team before you freestyled?
No, Bob and I were the first BMX Action Trick Team, Bob Harrow and I.
Oh, no way. I didn't know that. Okay. Wow. Yeah. Oh,
and cool. They had a skate ramp out in, I don't know if our first show was at a Pizza Hut, me and Bob, or if it was in Chandler, Arizona, on a plexiglass half pipe that was made by Rad Ramp, which was gnarly because it was at a BMX race, so it was covered with dust. I don't know if you ever rode plexiglass.
Slippery.
The dust on it, it's like ice, right? And this thing's huge, up on a trailer with, anyways, long story. But and then
still a rad story though. I mean, all this stuff's rad, bro.
Yeah, we used to jump. We had a jump, and we would jump into the transition to get our speed going. And that jump into that landing in that transition was like a double, you know.
Oh,
best
wow.
feeling. Best feeling, you know. And then Bob went his way, and Bob Harrow and I used to surf every day, fight like brothers, you know, because we were living together, you know.
Yeah. Did the competition get in the way being that close? Because you guys are both leaders.
Competition was insane, and Bob didn't like to work on the ramps or carry stuff, you know, and I'm like, screw this, man. And he liked to show up and ride. Well, those ramps got to get somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
But let me back up. I rode with Bob and John Swanigan. John Swanigan, no one ever talks about him. He was huge in this, man. John was as good as Bob.
Wow.
In the beginning of all, he was doing all the stuff Bob was doing. But you didn't hear about him because he was in San Diego, right? But I rode skate parks with him and Bob, and both of them were carving all over the place. We used to go ride San Diego, and then Bob and I would ride every skate park we could get to, you know?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the competition got between us, got kind of strained, you know, because, you know, he was just very competitive and so was I, you know. And then so Bob and I split and Mike Buff got on the team, man. And that was like, man, that was the best. Because Mike is the most entertaining person. If you ever go on the road, that's who you want to go with, man. He's just funny as hell. But
awesome.
Yeah. And Mike Buff, you know, he's got huge nuts. He'd do anything. Good, great rider. And so we started riding together and doing shows at like Marine Land and CBS News and all this other stuff. And how far do you want me to go with this?
As far as you want to go, because I love it all, dude. I you know, as the Mike, I just remember seeing you and Buff as a trick team. I'm learning a lot right now. I didn't know Haro was on the team, and I just, it's crazy. Yeah, just keep going, man.
Yeah, Bob and I were first, and then he built his own quarter pipe at his office, you know, because he was making those number plates. See, Bob used to go to the races with us because he's an unbelievable artist. And if you were racing and you didn't have a Bob Haro number plate, not with the ears, just a straight number with hand cut numbers, you weren't into it. You know what I mean? He was the man, and all the pros rode his number plates and they were custom made. And then he made the ones with the ears on them, you know?
Yep.
And then he eventually got his own office, built his own ramps, you know, and he was silently practicing, you know? Mm-hmm. So Mike Buff and I were like, all right. So Mike and I would just start going through skate parks. We tried this one in Marina Del Rey. Check this out. We got there on one of the first or second days, and Fred Blood was doing a 6'5" 40 over a canyon on roller skates with four wheels per shoe.
Wow.
And I was just like, I mean, we were starting to think about airs. In fact, there was a guy there on a gray bike that was airing out of a 10-foot bowl with 2 feet of vert, and he was airing about 2 feet.
Was that Jeff Watson?
No, this is I've heard Jeff.
You guys were before Jeff, weren't you? I think you were.
Yeah, Dominic said that Jeff went way back. I think Jeff passed away, right?
I'm not sure.
I think he did. I'm not sure though on that. I probably shouldn't have said that, but I'm not sure how he came into it, but I do remember watching this guy air out of the bowl and going, that's not possible. You know, because Bob Haro and Buff and Swanigan, we were jumping hips. We would, like, the bowl would come like this and round, and we would go from bowl to bowl over the hips, you know?
Yeah.
which is great, you know? It was like the perfect jump every time. Didn't ever get wet or nothing, but. So then, you know, Buff and I were touring, and, man, I think out of 7 years, the majority of the 7 years we were on the road, you know, either in a truck or we'd fly out of the tour, get on the plane, go to, you know, Europe and tour there, come back, get on the road, and just constantly, man. And it wasn't as glamorous as everybody thought. You know, everybody's like, oh man, you're not. No, it was like, we get off a plane. There's two guys waiting there, right? They grab your stuff and they've already cleared you through customs. You run through customs. Throw all your stuff in your bike in a car. You go to a TV station and you're on in 5 minutes. You're putting your bike together, go ride on this slippery surface, do that, go to another place, you know, shoot photos here, promote this. And it wasn't like we were out cruising around, you know?
Yeah, it was work. It was different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it got fun at times. And
yeah,
sometimes we would be so tired and jet lagged that we just couldn't keep it together, you know, and Mike would start making funny jokes and we joke about inside things, you know, and start cracking up on TV. It was great. But
you guys were the first trick team to tour, right? Freestyle team.
Well, Bob Haro and I did shows at a Pizza Hut, and we did shows in Chandler, Arizona, which was weird because I was riding in front of all my BMX guys I used to race. And here we are on a half pipe that no one's ever seen.
Wow.
That was a weird feeling. In fact, we would do a lot of races, you know, and it was really weird to see all my friends I used to compete against you know, that were now like really fast pros. And yeah, we're there doing a show, you know.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, weird too, but they're like, what's going on? Yeah, for sure. So you, so you guys, just, yeah, man. Ugh, everything was fresh and new, you know.
Well, not only that, but BMX, you show up sometimes 5 o'clock in the morning, wait for your first moto, race that, wait 4 hours, do your next one. Sometimes in Vegas, it's 110 degrees. You're there for 2 days, all day, right? And we would come in, do a 15-minute show, and it was like, see ya.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll drive around in our rental car. And
we're sold.
Around. Yeah. And we were, and we weren't on dirt very much. Yeah. Like, so it was great, man. There's a lot more back to why we started to ride, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, yeah, the feeling and going back to that. I remember seeing you, must have been mid, early 80s. I saw you on That's Incredible. Was that it? You're racing the horse?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. How did that come about?
A guy from Jamie Budge from National Enquirer. He was a writer for National Enquirer. And he goes, I have this idea. And he goes, do you want to do it? I'm like, yeah, let's do it. You know, and he had backing from That's Incredible, right? And the National Enquirer. So we met out at this equestrian center, and this lady that I was going to race, who races horses, she's like, this is ridiculous. I'm going to smoke this guy. I didn't have a chance against this horse. Right. So we had a drag race. I don't know, 100 yards or something like that. And I smoked the horse.
Yeah.
This is on a running track, you know, DG slippery. I beat the horse, and she rode off, and Jamie came over, and he's like, we got a problem. She was pissed. And she set it up. There was a horse that was in Europe somewhere that was being trained for the Olympics that were coming up or something. And she had that horse flown in to, because she doesn't like losing, right? She was competitive, man.
Wow. She imported the horse.
Yeah. That whole thing was an experience. I don't know how far you want me to go into that, but there was some things that happened.
I think it was cool because, like, I remember when, you know, when you first get it back then, you're getting into things, every little thing you see, you're a sponge. Like, you look at the ads, the stickers, where your sticker placement is, who rides for what? What are those bars? Like, you're just like, where's that spot? What's that trick? So and you would never see anything on TV. So anytime I would see anything about bikes on TV, I was like, what? And it was like super inspiring. And I specifically remember you racing that horse. And I was like, dude, that dude is rad. You know, it's like, and you ended up beating the horse at the end, didn't you? Didn't you do a whole race where you're like, you're jumping and the horse is jumping and you guys jump over water, right?
Yeah, I won one and she won two, but they know on a track how many full strides a horse is going to take.
Mm-hmm.
They know exactly. Well, she was whipping this horse so hard because he got the gun freaked him out that he skipped two strides. Imagine a horse spread out. He skipped that much, you know?
Wow.
And, but you know, it was kind of a thing, but I don't know if you remember Spanky Spangler.
Yep.
Stud guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he was my, like my bodyguard for making sure all the stunts were cool. You know, I forget what he, stunt coordinator. Right.
Right.
And, you know, they built the track. I came back the next day and he goes, come here, man. We got to go talk about this. And he goes, that jump look okay to you? And I go, looks fine to me. And he goes, that's 2 feet higher than it was yesterday. And it's spread farther apart. The producers came in at night and built up the jumps and spread them farther apart. Right. And I was already jumping blind. I'd have a hedge and a pole. I couldn't see my landing. Right.
Right.
And I go, hey, you're right. And he went and chewed out the producer. And those guys that raised that stuff, I mean, he was pissed, man.
Why did they raise it? Did they ever say?
They wanted me to be higher. They wanted me to be higher. But I'm thinking, man, I'm trying to beat this horse, man. I can't be that much time in the air, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you got to stay kind of low. You know what I mean? You got to get in there. Yeah.
I'll never forget that he was really paying attention, you know, and wanted everything to be right for me. And I appreciate that so much, you know?
Yeah, because most people don't care.
Yeah.
No, some do. But yeah, that's cool. I remember that, dude.
Well, you've been doing stuff in Hollywood. In fact, I was really impressed with everything you've done. So you know what that's like, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I remember when I went to do, I'll just quick story. I don't want to make this about me, but I got to tell you a story real quick because we're talking about this. I went and did Mall Cop. And when I first did Mall Cop, the Paul Blart movie, I thought, I went in for the audition and they wanted me to take over the mall. So I'm like, everybody down, freeze down. And they're like, oh, you got the part. And so I didn't have any idea I was riding at all until a couple of days before I was leaving, and like, bring your bike. And I was like, what? And then we did a table read. And then I was like, okay, oh, I am riding. So the other guys that were in the film, I think they had already kind of briefed them on what their stunt was going to be. Okay. Cause they were doing right. stunts. I thought this was an acting role, which I was wanted more because I didn't want to be put like in the category of always being the bike rider in movies, you know, cause I'm not going to go far with that. I mean, you know what I mean? You're only going to do so much. And so anyways, long story short, there was a big jump, a big, like, you know, 60-foot gap. And that's not my style of riding. I've never been a long distance jumper.
And that's a big gap.
It's a big gap. And they're like, do it. And I was like, dude, I can't, like, I can't, but I'm like, it's just not my thing. And I just remember, like, they had to come up with something else different, but it was almost like they were not salty, but like, dude, like someone must've informed them that my stunt that I wanted to do in the film. And I had no idea. I just went to set and they're like, you jumping this. I'm like, dude, I don't do distance jumping. And it created this thing, you know? And I was just like, so I know the feeling of like, if you woke up and you went and you're like, hey, this is, I can't even see what I'm doing. And you want me to jump this. And they're like, do it, dude, do it. And you're like, bro, you need to change this back. You know?
Yeah.
And
the pressure's on, right? It's not like 3 weeks before. It's like the camera's set up. The guy's like, okay, we're all, oh, by the way, there's a 60-foot gap, you know? And so didn't you feel that pressure?
Oh yeah. So I just said, you know, we figured out something else to do in it, but, and it was still cool. It still worked out. But you know what their vision of what they wanted for that scene wasn't exactly what their vision was. But at the same time, you know, if it was one of those things where, hey, you got 2 weeks to do this, I would have went, and you know, because I've always been kind of spooked on the big distance jumping.
Yeah,
it's not my style of riding. I respect it. I probably could do it if I really put my mind to it. But it's something that it's not my thing. So I just felt like a lot of pressure on set. Kevin James is looking at me like, dude, and I'm in a nice way. And then all the producer and the director is like, do it, bro. And I'm like, dude, you know, it's like, you know, so I get it, bro, but it's all entertainment. For me on the, that's incredible thing when you're riding, and probably a lot of other people out there, the old school BMXers, we were inspired, dude. It made me feel like what I'm doing makes sense. Like what I'm doing matters. Like, even though it did, you know what I mean? But like what I'm doing, like, is getting some, my world is getting some credibility on the almighty TV screen. You know what I mean? And it was just like, it was just a moment where I always remembered, like, it motivated me to ride. So
I appreciate that. But you know, back to what you were doing in Mall Cop, or is that what it was called? Mall Cop?
Yeah. Yeah.
To talk to somebody else that understands that, you know, when you go to shoot these things, it's not like, oh, hey man, and there's roses at your feet and, you know, you got all this stuff and are you sure that's okay? It's not like that. You know, it's really nice to feel somebody that understands that whole point of view, you know?
And that's what Spanky did for you. So, right. What
Spanky did for me. And I was so grateful because he was a god in doing stunts. I mean, he was nuts, man. He would take a Odyssey four-wheeler and jump anything, you know, he was nuts. And
I remember that, dude. Cool. Do you still talk to him or?
No. Did you cross paths with Pat Romano at all in when you're doing all your movies and stuff?
No, but that's another dude I would see on commercials and all the Mountain Dew commercials and back in the day, all those, you know, I'd see him in a bunch of commercials.
Yeah.
And he was the first that I ever knew that was doing a, yeah, like a free, did he have a free coaster? What's it when you pedal backwards?
Direct drive.
Yeah, that's it. I remember seeing him on a commercial where he's spinning, you know, so it was, he got into Hollywood pretty much, right? A lot.
From what I heard, he was big, you know, cause when him and I got together, he was showing me, you know, he was in with the Ice Capades and Peggy Fleming was still skating at shows and stuff. He knew all those people. So yeah, that was his main thing, you know?
Yeah.
But you got to think about this. Pat rode without brakes.
Crazy. No
brakes. And so they're like, oh, it's direct drive, but he would do boomerangs around the front of the bike without touching anything. And he could just go for days. Right.
So rad.
Yeah. There was a lot to be admired there. Yeah.
And well, go ahead. No, I was going to say, it's making me think about the movie Rad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you were in Rad too, right?
Yeah.
Right. So I remember seeing those boomerangs in the Send Me the Angel. That's what just hit my head. You know, she said doing a bunch of boomerangs, right?
Yeah.
How was the movie Rad though, compared to, you know, the That's Incredible. Was Rad more of kind of, you guys were treated more like these, because at that point you were top professional, right?
Well, what happened there was I'd been touring, right? And I was with Ronnie Wilton on the road, and we've been on the road for a long time. So I'd toured, he'd done some stuff with Bob, Mike Buff. Now I was with Ronnie, and I hit a spot, man, where I was like, I was sitting in a tub. I had a glass of whiskey in my hand and my head was hanging down and I was just numb. I know you know what that feels like, right? You're just, you don't know what's up, what's down. You're just worn out.
Yep.
And my manager called me with the movie Rad and they were offering me to direct the bike riders and ride in the movie. And I was like, I turned it down. I said, I can't do it. There had to be a point where I was like, man, I got to get my head together, man. I'm like, I was just done, you know? And they made me really like three more offers. And I said, you should call Eddie Fiola. And that's who I recommended. That's who did it. So I just did the opening and the closing and I'm on the cover. And I did some promo stuff in San Diego with Talia Shire. And that was about it.
You were just burnt out.
Yeah.
Over.
I don't know if you know what that's like. It's like you hit a wall. You got everybody in the world telling you this is the opportunity of a lifetime. This is it. And it's like, I didn't even have time to get over jet lag, man. I was like just running around for like 7 years, you know? And I was just like, I was numb. I had no feelings anymore. I was heavy into Pink Floyd and just sulking all day, you know?
Yeah, but you were competing at that time too, right? The AFA days.
No, when Ronnie and I were riding, there wasn't competition yet.
No. Wait, so that must have been, what, 83, 84 or something like that?
When the first competition came?
No, like when you guys were doing the touring a lot and stuff. Because didn't AFA come out around 85 or something like that?
I feel like I don't know. I'm really not good with dates. My memory's not that good. But I do remember the feeling of, once all you guys started riding, you guys got really good, right? And Buff and I didn't really get to practice because we were either sleeping in an airport, doing a show somewhere, building the sport. You know what I mean? Because we go
through. Yes.
They had no idea what freestyle was, you know? So we're all over the world doing this. And a competition is starting. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then there was like Woody and Martin who were getting really good. You know, some really good ground riders coming up. And so I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to compete, you know. And so I slowed down on my touring and I started practicing for competition. You know, started doing a lot of my own tricks, new tricks, started focusing on competition because that was the direction it was going, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. I went to AFAs. The first AFA I went to was in 1985. And I, you know, through the years, I'd always, you know, I grew up with Dennis McCoy. So everyone out there, all the OGs know Dennis. You know Dennis.
You were hanging with Dennis at that time?
Yeah, I met Dennis in 1982 at a mall. I came out of the mall with my sister from the arcade and I was new to the neighborhood and I'd been riding. But, you know, I built a little quarter pipe in my backyard and was riding by myself because I was into riding and I had the magazines. But I didn't know anybody, but I just loved riding. And I walk out and I see Dennis with all these dudes doing these tricks with a boombox for money. And I was like, who are these dudes?
Yeah.
And it was a BMX Brigade. which I eventually became a member. It was a crew of us that rode, and Dennis was basically the ringleader. And I just, you know, me and him clicked and we became best buds, and we rode 24/7 nonstop together. So everything that Dennis, you know, was experiencing, I was there as his best friend watching this happen. And, you know, I would hear all these stories about the contests and stuff. And then that's gradually or naturally what I ended up following in. It's 'cause that's what I wanted to do. Yeah. So I followed all the contests. And, I remember the first time I met you was at a contest. It was the 1988 King of Vert finals, but it was in 89 and it was in Irvine. And I remember Vision Streetwear sponsored it. And I went out there with Matt, and then that was a contest where Matt was still amateur, but he competed pro and he competed both classes and high air and won all of the shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude. And so I remember I fell or something, and I met you on the flat bottom, and it was the most inspiring thing because you gave me a pair of Hammer shin guards, bro.
Really?
Yep. I wish I still had them. They were the OG ones too. Like, they were green on one side. Is that the one? Yeah. And I was like, what? RL just gave me shin pads. Like, what? And that's where I didn't like meet you, but that's where like we, you know, exchanged. And I wanted to talk to you, lead into like that, those whole days of like, you're an entrepreneur in so many different ways. You started Hammer. Can you let us know what Hammer is for anyone listening?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was tired of ruining my shins. Then it was like, they get so sensitive after you hit them 100 million times. Right.
Yeah.
So, Billy Maestral, who was one of the owners of Body Glove, was, he was about 200 yards from my house. Their whole company was, right? So I went and talked to him, and I said, hey man, here's what I want to do out of neoprene, you know? And that's who made my first Hammer pads. I mean, they would do my orders for me, and they had metal mesh in the front and stuff, you know?
Yep.
But they were cool looking, never had a problem with them. And that worked out really good. And then we went with the knees, and we wanted something that wouldn't get hung up on your bike.
Yeah.
Because I was wearing Rector knee pads. I did a look back and my lever went inside my knee pad in the cup. And that's how I stayed till I hit flat bottom. And I was like, I never want that to happen again. You know,
those are horror stories. Like, oh,
yeah. And it's so long from you're like 6 feet out and you just see that flat bottom and you're just going to be like a rock, you know, but whatever. Anyways, that's how Hammer started. And, we get so much comment about start it again, do it again, you know, and all this stuff, but it's really hard to manufacture anything right now. Really.
Yeah.
But that's where the Hammer thing came.
Well, the look, I love the look. I remember that ad, you were sitting there and you had the two girls and your whole look with the cut bandana and the sleeves cut off. I remember that. I was like, what is this? You always seem to be like able to reinvent yourself. And that's the longevity to anything, I think, that you do, is it like reinventing yourself. You know what I mean? Would you agree to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just like you leaving bikes and all of a sudden I was seeing you in these movies and you weren't like just in the background. You weren't like an extra, you were like prominent. You had lines, you know what I mean? And you're riding in them. And I was just hearing all kinds of stuff about you. And I was really impressed that you crossed over. You know,
thanks. Yeah.
That's not an easy thing to do. You know,
it's not, because people want to put you in a box for one. Yeah. And they want to say, oh, you can't do more than one thing. And I was like, well, yeah, you can. And it's like, and so then you want to do music or you want to do this, you want to do that, or comedy or whatever. And so, yeah, it's, but I've learned to just kind of be like, yeah, it doesn't matter what they think. Keep them talking about you. And as long as you're doing things that you're doing, the things that you love. See, for me, just real quick, a lot of things are, it's all about the expression and about reinventing, because I get bored just doing the same thing. You know what I mean? So like, I want to reinvent myself all the time. And the expression factor of having a voice, you know, that's what I like, you know what I'm saying? So
I got a good question for you. Go ahead and finish. Sorry.
No, that's basically it. But what were you going to ask me?
So you've experienced a lot, right? You've been through the whole BMX freestyle thing, Hollywood, comedian, band. You've experienced multiple things like that are the top favorite things that everybody dreams about doing, once in their life. You know what I mean? And do you ever find it hard that you've seen so much? It's like, what do I do now? What do I do now? That's looks kind of interesting. You know, kind of that.
No, I mean, no, I don't, I guess the way that I interpret that is like, do I get bored and be like, well, what am I going to do? I've done all this stuff. There's nothing else left for me to do. I don't, because I keep reinventing each of those things. Do you know what I mean? Like a different song, different style song. Comedy, your routine's always changing because you always need material. You know what I mean? You can't do the same set for like your whole life. You know, you grow and adapt. And it's like, and it goes back to what I was saying earlier, is that everything's about riding, bro. You learn one footers, you're like, oh, cool. You learn one handers, you're like, cool. You're like, dude, I could put them together. Oh, put them together in a 360. What? Put them together in this. So you're always like, and with riding, lately I've been riding, I've been actually learning stuff. So it's just like putting your, you know, so to answer your question, at times I feel like I'm not really hitting a wall, but I get maybe a little tired, but not too much because I just keep a positive vibe about it, you know? And so I think there's so much more that could be done for all of us and for myself, I think. And I'm just trying to entertain myself while I'm here.
That's it, man. Trying to entertain yourself. But see, that's it. When you're young, you're like, oh my God, you guys flew to Arizona? Real, oh my, what was, you know, it's like you were on an airplane. And then once you've been around the world, you've been on stages in front of thousands of people and you've signed autographs, you've done everything that comes along with that, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like my family always goes, hey, let's go to Cabo, man. Cause, and it's like, you know, it's just people working and their water's blue like it is here. It's the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm like, I already seen that, you know, already.
Yeah.
And I don't have that thrill that I used to have, you know, so, but riding ground is hard and you got to earn it, you know, same thing with ramps, street, whatever, you got to earn it. And there's something in that that is kind of fulfilling that, you know, trying to entertain myself thing. You know?
Yeah. Well, flatland, I've always said this, freestyle flatland riding. That's anyone, you know, the tricks on the ground, people that might not know that are watching. That's more difficult and more, it takes more strain and more strength on your body than jumping does. Absolutely. Yeah, You're doing like a triple decade, you know, a single decade. Like it's a different kind of thing with your core and your strength and your arm strength, because you know, you're maneuvering your body around the bike. It's not as if, you know, you're jumping or doing an air, because you know the difference of the two. Doing an air, you're like, there's a point where you're weightless, you know, you're like, it doesn't take a lot of physical strength to do a high, you know, to do an air. It does, but it cannot compare to doing like, you know, a cherry picker or something, you know what I mean? So, or
it takes nuts, man, to hit that ramp 100 miles an hour, take in those G forces and try not to hang up. You know, it's a,
it still takes strength, but flatland. But I just think flatland is more of a physical strength. Just to kind of compliment on what you were saying or add to what you were saying about flatland.
It's over and over and over and over and over and over. But, you know, it's cool. I love it.
What about Bully Bikes, bro? How did that come about?
Because
you started your own bike company too. Another amazing thing. And you had your own team.
Totally out of stupidity. It was like,
I'm like, this shit's amazing. You're like, no, dude, you know, let me tell you.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this morning. There's advantages to being book smart and there's advantages to being street smart. And I'm street smart. Schooling and testing and all that stuff is like beyond me. Not good. My kids are great at it. Right. Not me. I forgot what was I talking about again?
Oh, no, you're good. Bully Bikes.
Right. So, the BMX had gone, we were having a bad economy, our economy was slowing down. I didn't even know what an economy was. I was like, I don't know, 19, 20 years old or something. And things were slowing down and I was losing sponsors, you know? So I didn't think, hey, man, why aren't, I mean, I'm on top. Why aren't they paying? Why don't they want to pay me anymore? I didn't really think, hey, because they're not selling as many bikes. I never crossed my mind. I didn't even know why they were paying me, to be honest with you. So I figured I'll just start a bike company. That seems next in line, you know? And I had some things I wanted to do, and Street was coming into it. I was living with Pete Augustin, and
Pete, man,
a lot of stories with that guy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, about starting Street, being the first one I ever saw, but anyways.
Yo. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Anyways. So we just started, I was like, let's build just two bikes, you know, and it worked, you know, I mean, it was working and stuff. And, that's where I came from, you know.
The graphics on Bully, did Mark McKee do those graphics?
Yes.
That was a Flatlander. Flatlander on Skyway, I remember that dude. Right?
Yeah. Long hair, Asian guy. Mm-hmm. I think he's Asian. Unbelievable. Unbelievable artist, right? And then, so, I don't know if you know the story about Steve Rocco and Rodney Mullen. World Industries. Do you know World Industries?
Yeah, I heard that, well, I don't really, I'm not, quote me if I'm wrong or let me know if I'm wrong, but didn't that dude rip all those dudes off?
Rip who off?
Did Rocco rip everybody off or something like that?
I know of.
Oh, no, that's a different, no. No. I don't know what I'm talking about. No, then I don't know.
When me and my friends would ride at the Huntington Beach Pier, he would be there. He would be skating. Steve is a real good skater, right?
Right.
He'd be doing street stuff and things like that. And then him and Per Wellner, Rodney Mullen, took me out to lunch and wanted to know how I was doing manufacturing, riding, real estate. And they take me out to lunch and pick my brain. And I was very impressed with that because it's one of my number one rules. If you want to know how to do something, I wouldn't necessarily go to school. I'd go to a guy that's doing it exactly the way you want and just ask him, you know?
Yeah.
That's straight from the horse's mouth, as they say.
Yep.
So Steve was starting his company with Rodney and they were living off selling stickers. They were eating like rice and stuff.
Wow.
I mean, they were starving, you know, and long story short, Steve's was the first company to sell or to get his company on the IPO on the stock market, you know? So he sold out. He's living in Hawaii, doing really good. Rodney's doing really good. But they both lived with me for, I don't know, a year or two. That was an experience, man. Wow. You know who Rodney Mullen is, right?
Yeah, amazing.
I've told the story a million times. It didn't matter if he was sick and thrown up. Didn't matter if it was raining outside, storming. He rode. 2 o'clock in the morning, midnight. I'd sit in my, look down on the parking lot and watch him. And it was practice for him, but it was perfection. It wasn't like he was trying to learn something. He had everything down. So I had a great experience with Rodney. He is a super deep person. So am I. And we just had really good conversations. Learned a lot from him.
Yeah, I just saw him recently on the new Tony Hawk documentary, Until the Wheels Fall Off. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I'm watching. I'm halfway through it.
So good.
Right? You see him like at the beginning, he's riding that half pipe and they're shooting him and he's just bailing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that current age? Is that?
Yeah. It? Yeah. I think that footage was when it might've been, cause Tony did a 50 at 50. I think that might've been a 900 he did for that, which was a couple years ago or something, or might've been recent, but I know documentaries take a while to film, you know, that ramp, I ride that ramp quite a bit with him when I was going down there during COVID. That's the same ramp that he uses for all of his tours and stuff like the Boom Boom Huck Jam and a lot of his events that he does. The ramp's amazing. Tony, that's a whole nother story. He's an amazing individual. You know, it's funny. I asked Tony, I'm like, hey dude, like back in the day when you'd be a pipeline and shit, would there be any BMXers there? And he's like, oh yeah. And he was talking about Jeff Watson. And I, cause you know, in my mind, I was like, I saw like Pipeline and Del Mar for the first time with BMXers in it. So from a Midwest kid, I was like, damn, all these bike riders riding this, you know what I mean? Like, And I just, I'd love to see any of that. If anyone out there has any of that older footage, man, if some bike riders in there would be awesome. Because I knew bikes have always been there since the beginning with pools and banks and everything else. It's just a natural thing. You're going to try to ride it, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but with back to Bully though. So you had a full on team, right? Didn't you sponsor Dominguez? I remember. Yeah. And you sponsored a lot of people. You had a whole team, right? What was it? Okay. You're laughing. What was the deal with Dominguez?
Well, you know, Dominguez doesn't practice, right? You know that, right?
Oh, he just shows up and goes for it. It's badass.
It. It is. It's because I'm like over and over and over and over. And him and Brian, they show up at a contest and they just learn everybody else's tricks and practice.
You're talking about anyone out there, you're talking about Brian Blyther, just so anyone out there listening.
Brian Blyther, yeah. Brian Blyther and Mike Dominguez are like, it's just, I love, it's like Ronnie Anderson and BMX and his brother. They're total outcasts, man. They show up on a starting line of a championship BMX race with a cigarette and a beer, you know? Yeah. Well, and all these other guys are training 5 hours a day doing starts and stuff. And then Ronnie would win.
You're talking about the Patterson brothers, right?
No, that's Brent and Brian.
Oh, wait.
Ronnie and Richie also race for Patterson.
Well,
but Ronnie Anderson is a wild man. He's like half the size of everybody, ripped, right? Just big mouth and faster than freaking shit, man. And the complete opposite of what everybody else was doing, where they're all big and
training and like,
And he would just show up on the starting line with a beer and a cigarette in his hand, right? On the finals in the main event, you know?
Punk rock before punk rock, bro.
Yeah. He was ahead of his time, man.
Yeah. You know, what's crazy. I rode with Dominguez. Vans had this little ramp, like a 10 foot tall, vert ramp in their parking lot a few years ago. And so I had not done can-cans in a while and I was going down there riding a lot. And Dominguez had actually hit me up and said, "Hey, I'm going to go ride the ramp with you." And this was like a crazy moment for me because being a Midwest kid and looking up to all of you and learning these tricks in my backyard and stuff, I ended up relearning can-cans, or I wouldn't really say relearning, but just did them again that day. And Dominguez shot the photo. And I was like, what am I doing? Like, this is like to answer your question, is there anything else? No. Do you feel like you're doing all these things? Is there anything else in life that you feel like you do going to? That was one of those moments like, okay, my life's done. I'm good. Yeah. Dominguez just shot a photo of some shit he made up in 85 of me at Vans in their parking lot. Wait, aren't I like a Midwest kid? I'm not supposed to be here, am I? Yeah. You know what I mean? You kind of you're still stuck in your head like that. So
yeah, he's cool. He's one of my favorite people.
Yeah, he's cool.
Sport. But
who inspired you?
Motorcycles, probably. Yeah. You know. And I had a bike, you know, and I couldn't afford a motorcycle at the time. So I'm like, do it on a bike, you know, a bicycle. Yeah. But yeah, Dominguez and I cut a deal. He was coming back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I sent him a bike and I started thinking, wait a minute, man, this is Mike Dominguez. I'm pretty sure he's not practicing. Even if it's his comeback, he's not practicing. So I hired Chris Day. I'm like, Chris, this is after a couple months, right?
Mm-hmm.
I need you to go out there and see if Michael's riding, you know, and see if he got the bike. And so Chris came back and I go, did you see the bike? He goes, yep.
Is it on the box?
I go, where was it? He goes, it's in the backyard rusting in the rain. He goes, it's half put together. It's not even put together. It's just sitting out there rusting. Brand new bike, right?
Wow.
And, you know, and I didn't say anything because that's Dominguez. And when he came back, you know, Matt dropped in first and did back-to-back 900s, I think. And Michael did a 900 pretty high out. I'm pretty sure there wasn't a whole lot of practicing, but came pretty close. But here's, you know, when you hit a ramp.
I was at that contest.
Were you?
Yeah, I think it might have been like 80, was it 89 maybe? It was in the East Coast somewhere, if I remember right.
Yeah,
it was the King of Vert. And like that was like his debut, Dominguez on Bully. And I was like, wow, all right, cool, you know?
Yeah,
I remember.
I was riding, Chris Rothrock was living with me at the time. Oh, cool. And if you remember, on the side of the ramp, everybody put their bikes upside down. That's where they'd store their bikes. And Chris and I think Todd Anderson and I, no, Chris and me and maybe Pete Carney or something, been touring a long time. And Chris was wiped. We were all wiped out, right? And Chris hung up on an air and went right off the edge of the ramp into everybody's bikes. And Winkle and I were up in the crowd going, oh, shit, man. He's wiped out all these bikes. But what I was going to say is, you know, when you're riding a ramp, okay, if you're going up, do both of your tires hit coping going out and coming in? Or is it just your front tire?
More like the front, yeah, I mean, I don't really feel my back tire as much. I think you compress and you come off the lip.
Yeah.
Depends on if the coping sticks out, how far it sticks out and stuff like that. But yeah, you know how
it is, right? That's not how it works with Dominguez though. Cause I watched him at Del Mar, which I saw Tony Hawk do some amazing things there, but he rolled this big, long full pipe, half pipe. He dives in. And when he would come out, you could hear his tires go click, click. You can hear both tires. He rides straight up, click, click. And when he comes in, click, click.
Yeah.
I mean, that's okay. That's insanely hard to do when you're going that fast.
Yeah.
To just tick both of them with both tires. And then consider that you don't even know if your bike's broke. You don't work on your bike. You don't practice. And so it always was amazing to watch him ride, him and Brian together. Just, you know, so it was just pure natural talent.
You know? Magical. I remember seeing a sequence. I think it was Del Mar where Dominguez did a 180 tail whip flyout and he landed on his seat. I think maybe a foot came off, but that's before anybody was doing I know Blyther made up the tail whip on flat ground, right? From what I understand. Am I right about that? I don't know.
But Brian could learn anything in practice at an event, you know, and it would be 10 feet out. It didn't matter. You just figure it out and smoother than, you know.
Well, yeah, those guys are amazing. They're super cool, chill dudes. I wanted to ask you a question about you. You're coming out with a new bike.
Well.
Like a whole new thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I started riding.
RL is back.
Well, I got hooked into, which I thought was the dumbest thing in the world, the big bikes, you know, Mike Buff, big fat red tires. And I was like, oh God, that is the dumbest looking bike. And then Todd Lyons from SC gave me one and I started riding it, man. It was a blast. Mm-hmm. And when you go on these rideouts, like Santa Cruz, 5,000 people on these big bikes.
It's right? Insane. It's awesome. Yeah.
It's insane. I just can't tell you all the exciting stuff that goes on, especially after what you and I have already seen in this world.
Mm-hmm.
It's new. Everything that goes on is new. So I started riding and started instantly doing freestyle on them because that's what I come from, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So we've been trying to get one made, but it's, we've actually got them on order. They're prepaid, our prototypes, right? And nobody can get any chromoly. Nobody can hire welders. Everybody's struggling with it. And we want to do it American made, you know?
And it's called RL Bikes, right?
It's RL American made bikes.
Awesome.
I think.
Yeah. Awesome.
You know, there's social media. That's one name. There's this, that's another name. This t-shirt has, I can't remember all the, my son does all that. He puts that all together, you know?
Awesome.
Which is a huge part of this. I got to say that Dylan, he's one doing all the social media, sets up all the stuff, you know, and that's been huge.
Yeah. It seems like you got a really close family. That's great. You guys all like, you know, involved with each other and around BMX, which is pretty cool. Speaking of the rideouts, I'm leaving. I'm doing the one April 23rd in Vegas. I recently signed with JT and they're sending me out there to do a ride out. And they're like, do you want us to bring you a big bike? And at first I was like, man, I ain't selling out. So I'll go out there on my BMX. They're like, listen, we'll bring one so you can ride it. So you have a ride bike. I go, okay, I'll try it. And then I was like, all right, I'll open my mind and I'll give it a try. You know what I mean? I'll ride it. Yeah. It's just a bike. It's just a ride. It's like, yeah. You know what I mean? But I want to be, I just want to be, if I'm riding out and we're riding around, I want to be able to like hit some shit. You know what I mean? It'd be like, right. You know, like.
So. But, and you're going to be kind of unique. I mean, more guys are getting into it that way.
Yeah.
But I was the same way. I'm like, well, let's do 1-8. Let's do a G-turn. Let's do, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but the cool thing is it's about seeing your friends and just riding a bike.
Yeah.
It's, you don't have to do anything. You know, all the young kids will be doing all that stuff. You just sit there, ride, wheelie, jump, do it if you want to do it, but just seeing your friends, you know, and it's really, and then when you go on the big rides like LA, that one, man, they close down all the streets of all the main streets in Hollywood, you know, and you just own the streets, man. They got, it's patrolled. It's awesome.
Okay. And this is going to be like, probably you're going to be like, dude, that's a weird question or a stupid question, but I don't know. Cause I never rode one of those big bikes. Do you get around faster on those things compared to a 20 inch?
They're more comfortable. Definitely.
But I'm saying like speed wise, like when you're pedaling, like,
yeah,
do they move quicker? Cause they're bigger bikes and the wheelbase is bigger. And they're like, do you have to, in other words, to keep up with them on a 20 inch, would I have to be pedaling more? Sounds like a stupid question.
Yeah. Because we went to the Buckeye bike show in Dayton, Ohio, and I thought big bikes was everywhere. Right. So we brought our big bikes. Dylan and I were the only big bikes. It was all 20 inch and they were working to keep up with us.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Cause I thought maybe, yeah. So yeah, because I don't want to be like the last dude. Hey, wait up, guys.
No. Oh, you're going on a 20 inch?
No, I'm gonna take my it's Vegas, so I'm driving there, but I'm gonna take my 20 inch, but they're gonna bring me a bigger bike for me to ride, which is cool. I'm down. It'll be fun. It reminds me when me and Dennis, you know, when I grew up in Kansas City with Dennis and the Brigade, we had our own crew of dudes. So where we would do all day rideouts, we would meet downtown, you know, but at the time, and this is back in the day, 30, 40 people was a lot, you know what I mean? Like on BMX bikes, like what are these guys? People were like shocked. Like they didn't know how to respond. Like what are these dudes doing all together? And now that they got thousands of people on these big bikes, it's crazy to like see how much, you know, it's not grown from BMX, but you know what I mean? Like from when it was, when we did it to nowadays, a kid getting into it kind of just goes into this big thing, you know?
Yeah.
Cool. It's cool.
It's very cool, man. It's, you know, I don't close my mind to anything. Mike Buff was telling me about it. Yeah, it's cool. And I'm like, you know, and Mike likes those white and blue and red. He likes these really, they're not my colors. Right. So I ordered one of his bikes with all the colors just to get I wanted the full trip that came along with it, you know, and I'm stoked. I still have it. And I love that thing. It's going to be a sea of SE riders. Todd Lyons he's like the master promoter behind all that. And he does such a great job, but
they sell a lot of those bikes, man, for sure.
Yeah. But it's customizing your bike. You know, they paint them, gold plate things. They, you know, people put stereos on the back of them. They do everything. It's a whole different trip than going to a freestyle contest. Completely.
Yeah.
You know,
I can't wait. It's going to be fun, man. I'm pretty stoked. Well, cool, man. It's been awesome talking to you. I'm excited. Yeah. I can't wait to see your new bikes. I would like to get a session with you at some point in time in life.
Right.
That'd be amazing. What's your Instagram? And you got a website and Instagram and YouTube you could drop for everyone to come and check, see what you're doing. Check it out.
I'm not sure. I think if you just go put in RL Osborne, everything will come up.
For YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and everything, right?
Yeah, I can't remember all those names. They all have different formats. Are we running out of time? Because I got a question for you.
No, we're not running out of time. I usually like to keep it like a little over an hour. I think about like when I want to sit and listen to something, I don't want to listen to a 3-hour interview. No offense, but.
I'm glad.
No, not stuff to do, like I got to let you go. But I mean, in life, like I'm always running around doing all these jobs that like it's hard for me to sit down and watch a movie for an hour and a half at times. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But what was the question?
So you made a post and you were like, man, you said something about, I just want things to stop for a little bit or something like that. Do you remember that? It's like a month ago. You seemed kind of like you were just getting ran crazy. Like,
Well, yeah, I'm trying to remember the post. Yeah, at times, my situation, I've raised my kids on my own, meaning that like I've intentionally stayed single for the last 10 years. I have no family in California and I have no one to rely on. And if I don't make money and put food on the table, they ain't eating. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm sure you understand that.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, you know, a lot of things that I've faced with BMX, with the rise of being, making a name for yourself and having these other opportunities outside of the sport also created a lot of envy and jealousy, which actually worked against me. And then sponsors, you know what I mean? It's just been a crazy ride.
Jealousy from who?
From the industry. I mean, this is back, but this is a while ago. This is back in like maybe 2008, nine, maybe. Yeah.
This is good. I'm enjoying. Sorry to get through that, but.
No, it's okay. And so it just, it you know, in a weird kind of way, it's like, you know, I really wish BMX would stop being its own worst enemy if they expect anything to grow, you know, and, you know, to reflect on what I meant earlier, when I saw you on That's Incredible, I wasn't mad and talking shit about it. I was like, this is dope. This is rad. This is, and so a lot of people never really understood that, like, oh, he lives in Beverly Hills. I wasn't from Beverly Hills. And you know what? I was proud of that. And I made money in a lot of different ways. It wasn't all bike riding, but it's easy if when you get your start with bike riding to people forget about everything else you're doing and go and focus on like, well, he does that trick and I do this trick.
Yeah.
So he has that. So I should have that. I was like, bro, you need to hustle harder and quit complaining about me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's because I'm going to still be doing what I'm doing. It isn't going to change anything, you know, but I let it affect me, bro. That's what I'm saying. And I let
it hurts. Criticism. It hurts. Don't it?
It did, but it made me tougher. Now I don't, whatever's I've learned.
You
a lot.
Know, it's there. It's took me a long time to figure out it's them with the problem, not you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's their, you know, perception. What I mean? Yeah.
Have you ever done where you start dumbing down or just bringing yourself down to be able to, cause you don't want to lose friends. Right. So you kind of, you talk maybe down about yourself or something like that to try to even the table, but it don't work. It doesn't work.
No. And I reached a point where I was like, you know what, dude, like I've been through a lot. And I just, what I did to help me through all of that. And this is years ago. This isn't anyone listening. This isn't now. This is an old story.
Right.
You know, I went out and rode every day and I took my GoPro and I'd set goals and I did things that make me feel good to reprogram the reason why I was in this position, the reason why I handle it, the way to handle it differently. And I analyzed myself, but it was all the therapy through the riding. And, you know, I just think that when people, you know, here's an example. I was at the skate park yesterday and I overheard these kids talking. And I know a couple of the skaters, they're young, but we're not friends like that. We just see each other park. And there's this other kid there. I didn't say anything. I'm just listening, put on my pads. And this dude's talking all this trash about like all these skaters and how this dude sells out and this dude doesn't ride anymore. And this dude rides for this, that, and the other. And he's just, I'm just like listening to him going like, man, that kind of talk is not going to get you where you really want to go. You know what I mean? And then the dude's talking stuff about like some of the best skaters in the world. And then he drops in to ride like the smallest bowl there and he can't really do anything on it. I was just like, dude, like what is like, what? I don't understand you. Like if you would spend more time, I don't even know this kid and I don't really care, but I'm just saying if you would just in general, if you spend more time talking about like what you want and not what other people are doing, if you want what other people are doing, learn how to do it, apply yourself, go into it with a positive outlook. But, you know, hey, everyone's got to learn things on their own, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's easier to tear you down than confront what you went through to get there. You know what I mean? But I will tell you straight up now that I've been watching you and all the stuff that you're doing on, and it's impressive. And I commend you for raising your kids on your own. That is, I watched my sister do that. That is super difficult, especially when you're trying to do all these other things. Be the dad and go to the games and handle all this stuff, make the money. It's all on you, man. That's huge.
Thanks, dude. I mean, their mom's in the picture, but I've had my kids the majority of the time during a breakup, our divorce. I mean, because I just said, no one gets left behind. I mean, I had to quit touring. I mean, I love touring. I love being on the road. That's why I've been positioning myself to do comedy and do music. Because my kids are going to get older and they are going to move on. And that shit hurts because I've made my life them. And so I've already learned I've had detachment issues. You know what I mean? Like, oh, like, don't leave me. And because I have no one, I'm 52 years old and I ride bikes. Imagine trying to find, you know what I mean? A relationship, you know what I'm saying? A relationship's kind of hard. So for me, I just immerse myself into my work. And so, you know, it hurts. You're a father, you get it. Your kids get older. And that's why I was applauding you as well. You have a close family and it seems like you and your son are super close and it's the BMX bond. And I just think that that's really, really awesome. You know,
I appreciate that. I got to say, my wife has been super family oriented, you know, and if it wasn't for her, things might be a little different. You know, I'm kind of flat sometimes because I don't know, you know, it's like you're used to your adrenaline running every day and all these things going on. And then you get kind of tired of seeing everything. It's like,
yeah,
what do I do now? But anyways, it's a huge part of her. And yeah, Dylan and I are really close. My other son and I are close and learning more about each other. So
awesome.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Life is now, dude. We got one life. Let's live it. Let's keep ripping. I'm stoked that everything you're doing, I'm stoked to see you riding again. I can't wait to see those bikes. You know what I mean? And it's been an honor to interview you. Always one of my favorites. And this is
likewise, man.
This is rad.
No, you got a movie coming out. Like, aren't you just shooting a sequel to?
No, we phoned a pilot for this TV series called Run Boys. And basically it's a pilot. And so it's up to them to see what they, you know, with where they can get the stream or air or whatever. And I think they're putting all the final touches of the pilot together before they start shopping it. So, and then so.
Triple X? What about Triple X? Didn't I see something come up about that?
Dude, Triple X is pretty cool. Okay. I used to host a TV show for ESPN called 54321. Oh no, sorry. That was for Fox. It was called X Today. Sorry. I'm confused. And so
that's cool that you get them mixed up. Cause most people be like, I was on Fox one time.
Yeah, right.
Is that ESPN? Or?
Well, the problem that here's the deal real quickly with me, with TV, when I started doing TV, cause I did it for ESPN for 5 years is I liked it. But I was always battling like, oh, I'm a biker. Because when I was doing TV, that's when X Games was like banging. You know what I'm saying? Like who are these guys? This, that. And I rode my whole life to be one of those guys. I didn't ride my whole life to be like, okay, we got this big thing now, this X Games and all these opportunities and all these things going on that you dreamed of, throw it away to host a TV show. Because I said, well, they're in control of that TV show.
Yeah.
I'm not. I am in control of my riding. So I wish I would have enjoyed the hosting more because I was always battling it. I was always trying to defend my riding because people are like, you don't ride anymore now, huh? Now you're doing TV, huh? You know what I mean?
So, which is just as cool, man. Just as hard to break into. Just as
I didn't look at it like that. I looked at it like, no, dude, I'm a bike rider, bro. I'm the biker in black. Let's do them tail whips. Let's go. And so I got in Triple X because Vin Diesel came to the X Games in Philadelphia and I interviewed him for my show and I had no idea who he was. And it was early in his career too, but you know, and then he liked me and put me in the film. I was like, cool. And that's how I got in that. For me, I know Tony Hawk was in it, Kerry Hart, Hoffman, Mike Escamilla. I don't know how they got in it, Mike Vallely. But for me, it was like Vin Diesel went straight to the director and goes, I like this dude, put him in the film.
I can tell you exactly why he did that.
What is that?
You want me to answer that for you? And this is one thing that's really impressed me about you, not just doing bike stuff in Hollywood, but you act. You know, Mike Dominguez and I were on a commercial and they had the camera set up and they told us both at the same time, take your shirt off, run at the camera and tell us who you are and be happy. And Mike and I looked at each other and we're like,
woo!
No, we were like, nah. No, that ain't us, man. Go to the actors. Those guys do that. We will ride. But, and I mean, we were like, I remember Mike going, walks up on Mike. But you, Paul McCartney said this thing when you're singing, man, you just, your top of your head has to come off. You got to let it out. And every time I see you, you're completely immersed into that scene, whatever it is you're doing. You don't have any hangups with just getting into that part. And that's not easy to do. I can't do it. I can't do it. I could not act.
Thanks. Yeah. Acting's fun. It's definitely a different hurry up, sit and wait kind of thing, but it's fun.
Yeah.
You need to actually say action. You do the scene and then it's like, I got to go sit for 3 more hours. Okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I thank you, man. I appreciate you so much.
Stand-up comedy. I wouldn't go in front of a bunch of people and try to tell jokes for $1 million, man. No way.
Dude, it's different, bro. It's a trip. I got my own comedy show coming up at the Rainbow. May 15th. Yeah. It's called Stay Rad. It's Rick Thorne's Stay Rad Comedy Show. And I hired the comics.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it upstairs at the Rainbow. And if it goes well, I'll get it once a month. And it was all putting it together myself. I'm a very DIY kind of person. I believe that once you start something you want to do, starting is like half the battle. Once you start, you're in it. You know, yeah. You're in it. It's like talking about your dad doing the magazine. You start the magazine, you don't know where it's going to go. You start this and then you're in it. You're in it to win it. Next thing you know, it's like, what, you know? So
I hope you see those qualities in you, because you do a lot of things that quite honestly scare the shit out of me. You know, putting together a team, I would never think about that. I mean, trying to get a bike built, yeah, I can understand that. But I guess that's why I'm so impressed with you, is you do this stuff that really scares me, that I can't do. I don't want to do. I can't do.
It scares me too, bro. When you bomb, it sucks. No, I was kidding.
No, but that's part of the deal, right?
Yeah. It's just like falling down riding, bro. It goes back to that, like, man, I want to learn that trick. And then you may get hurt or whatever the case is, or a contest where you don't place as good. And you're like, I'm coming back. It's like, it happens in all of it, man. It
really yeah.
Does. Yeah.
Definitely.
And then you just learn to kind of get better at it. And then it doesn't happen as much. So,
yeah. Well, let me know when all this stuff goes on, man. Cause I love following what you do. I just don't know what to watch and when to see it, you know?
Hell yeah, dude, for sure. And I'll let you know when this comes out. And I really appreciate you taking the time, dude.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I was looking forward to this, Rick. So
stoked.
Thanks for having me. Hopefully I'll see you at an event.
Yeah, absolutely, bro. All right.
You're like 5 hours from me.
You live, how far away are you from Santa Cruz? You're close, right?
45 minutes. Santa Cruz is farther. So this is Monterey, Carmel, and Pebble Beach right here on the peninsula, you know, Salinas. And then you just 45 minutes, you go to Santa Cruz, which is like, if you like jumping, it's the best, man. They got every jump you could imagine there, you know?
Yeah.
Santa Cruz is great.
One of my sponsors is from there, a sock company called Merge for Socks. So next time I come up that way, I'm going to hit you up.
Cool.
And we'll get a session in.
Yeah. We have a little skate park. Doesn't have any big bowls, you know, but it's fun. It's got a spine and stuff like that.
Is that the one you post a lot that I see you posting at?
Yeah. It's like not even a mile from my house. We got to go at like 8 o'clock in the morning though, you know, otherwise. Yeah. Cause bikes are not allowed there, but they're starting to accept us. They used to call the cops on me and now they're kind of, we get to know them a little bit, you know.
Some things never change, do they? I'm like, dude, come on. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Right.
I personally like going to the skate parks when there's not a lot of people there. And here's why. Because I want to go there and learn stuff. Like I could drive from 2 hours to this park or, you know, 40 an hour to this park or this park. And I'm going to go to these parks and I'm going to do the tricks I already know, get a photo, get a line, get whatever. But if I want to learn something, I go to a skate park that's like my home base. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I could do something over and over and over again and no one's in my way. And I found a skate park that's like that. And
in so, LA?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not going to say where it is right now. I'll tell you.
Because
everybody's going to be like, I'm coming to the park. And
blow yeah, up right.
No way. You're not doing it. And so like, especially when kids are in school and I'm fortunate enough to be able to go when I want, then, you know, there's hardly any 2 or 3 people there. So I could like get to work. And I get my clips and stuff and I'm able to like learn stuff. So then now when I go to a new spot, I have something new to where I can take that trick I learned over here and put it over here. You know how it works.
Yeah.
You know, so
I know it's like when I'm dropping in and I hear a skateboarder, I'm like, man, I don't want to like be going over his spine and that skateboard's like going to be right under there. I struggle enough with a spine as it is, but
yeah,
but it's cool. We have this like understanding there now kind of.
That's cool.
Works out pretty good.
So. Yeah. And I will say this before I go. One thing that I think parents need to inform their kids is that a skate park is not a jungle gym.
Yeah.
Okay. So if your kid wants to go on swings and shit and like slides, that's over there.
Yeah.
This is the skate park and they have their kids like running around without nothing, just like on foot, like parkour. And I'm like, dude, like I know they're kids and they don't know any different. I get it.
Yeah.
But they should do a course at school.
Yeah.
That says skate parks is not a parkour event.
Yeah.
You know, or a place to do parkour or just stand there on the flat bottom. I'm like,
Let your dog run around. I came off a double one time and there's a little dog right down there. And I'm like, he's going to die. And luckily he moved. Right. And the guy just lets him run free. And I'm like, well, that's going to happen. You know?
Yeah. This park is not there, but anyways. Have a great day. I appreciate you taking the time and stay rad, dude. I'll talk to you soon.
Keep me posted on your stuff too.
I will for sure.
All right. Keep it up, man. Good to see you.
Much love, brother.
All right. See ya.
Peace.
I don't even know how to turn this thing off. So
go over to the side where it says end. You find it? It's red, bottom left.
Leave?
Or bottom right. Bottom left. Right. It says bottom
leave.
Right.
Leave.
Oh, leave works too.
Okay.
Okay.